20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, Packers fans? Happy Wednesday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I am your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at AndyHermanNFL and the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Quick update before we even jump in and get started today. We are now on Spotify video as well. So if that is something where you usually use Spotify or you haven't been using Spotify because you need the video, we are now on Spotify video as well. So make sure to check that out. Today, we've got a great show lined up for you. We're going to be going over some current Green Bay Packers who could change the Packers' philosophy as they head into the draft here in just a couple weeks. We'll go over that in just a moment. Before we get there, shout out to our brand new Pack-A-Day Podcast YouTube member, Angry Mike, and Jay Stanley for upgrading to be an all-pro member. Appreciate you guys a ton. If you're interested in those memberships, check them out over on YouTube. Definitely some perks, early access to videos, some bonus content throughout the year, and of course, the ever-popular members Q&A every single week. Also want to give a shout out. I do not have any stake in these. I do not have any, I'm not advertising for myself here. I have not been paid to say this. Two amazing draft guides that are probably actually a little bit competing against each other. So that's how you know I'm not, favoring one or over the other. But two that I absolutely love that I cannot recommend for Packers fans enough every single year. I used to write for the Cheesehead TV draft guide. I don't do it anymore. It was a labor of love. I enjoyed doing it. I wish I could still do it. I just don't have the time with everything that I do for Pack-A-Day. But the group and team that they put together for the Cheesehead TV draft guide every single year does such an amazing job. And it just supports Packers writers that are interested in the team and interested in the draft. So highly recommend checking that out. They do a great job with it every year. You've got some interesting and fun feature articles in that as well. And then the other one is the Green Bay Draft Guide. You can find that over on PackerReport.com. Ross Uglum, Jacob Morley, those guys put so much time, effort, and energy. There's a lot of people that work on that. But what they do such a tremendous job on every single year is really narrowing down some of the top Packers targets based on what Goody has done in the past. And there is no guide, no anything that's going to give you that level of information based on previous, historical trends for the Packers. Two guides that I use a ton that help out a ton. So support some fellow Packers fans and go get those two drafted. They're both super cheap too. I mean, I think for under $20, you get both. And, you go to a store and pick up a draft guide that's not Packers centric. You're probably spending, $12-15, and you can probably get both of these for right around that price. So again, Green Bay Draft Guide, PackerReport.com, and Cheesehead TV for the Cheesehead TV Draft Guide. Awesome job from both. Congratulations to both of you guys, both sets of guides for putting out tremendous content, but go make sure to check those out. No real news around the Packers sphere, as we've kind of been talking about. We don't, or at least I don't really expect much to happen between now and the start of the draft. And then, of course, day one is probably going to come and go without much Packers news either. You never know. There could always be a surprise here or there, and we'll definitely keep an eye out for it. But that doesn't mean that we don't have a ton of great stuff for you guys 365 days a year. Make sure to like, subscribe, comment, give those 5-star reviews when you have a chance. But we've got my daily show. We've got the daily draft. Andrew Mertek's putting out stuff. And of course, the audio podcast has a full team of phenomenal people like Jacob Morley and Ross Uglum and Dusty Evely and so many other incredible people. So make sure you're checking all those out. But today, as I mentioned, what I'm going to be doing is going over some current Green Bay Packers that could really change how Green Bay looks at this draft and just the kind of future of the team, and maybe pivots a little bit of how they're thinking. And we'll kind of go through some of those positions. If you look at it at this time last year, all right, we sat here, I can speak for myself. I sat here talking about, hey, I think Colby Wooden is going to be a cut candidate. Like, I think he's going to have to really work hard to stay on this team. He hadn't done anything in his first couple years. It looked like he didn't have a great spot on the roster. And then eventually we knew, they drafted Warren Brinson and Nasir Stackhouse came in, and you're looking at it, you're like, yeah, I don't. Kenny Clark, of course, was still there at the time. Like, I don't know that he is going to have a spot on this team. And of course, we now know a year later, well, of course, he's traded now, but we know a year later that last year they were having him put on weight and they had a specific role in mind for him. Even if Kenny would have stayed on the team, I think they had a real role carved out for Colby Wooden. I think they knew that he was going to be a legitimate part of their defense a season ago. I don't know if at this point last year, Green Bay, I think it was a little bit later. I think it was a little bit more around mini camps, but it wasn't far from now where Green Bay had the idea that Bo Melton could play multiple positions. That was not something that we had on our bingo card at this time a year ago. And they had that idea. It was probably at least floating in the ether around 1265 around this time a year ago that maybe Bo could play multiple positions. Now, he ended up not playing a snap on defense, but he was listed as a corner more than a wide receiver, even though he played wide receiver more than corner. That was not something that we could have sat here predicting a year ago at this time. I actually believe, I don't know this 100% to be sure, I believe that Green Bay actually had pretty, you know, I think they really liked Travis Glover a year ago, and I think he was going to be a big part of their backup plans last year. And it just, unfortunately, he got hurt. But at this time last year, you know, we didn't know that. It was a little bit around, you know, I think mini camps and OTAs where it started to seem like maybe they liked him a little bit more than we knew at the time. Of course, at this time last year, Jair Alexander was still on the roster. Now, I had been talking about over and over, and others have been talking about, like, yeah, I think he's not going to be on this team. We could sort of see the writing on the wall, but we didn't know for sure. And there was still some inkling of like, hey, maybe he does end up coming back. And so there was that whole thing, you know, that was sort of on everyone's mind and not knowing for sure what was going to happen with him. That Green Bay knew at this time, I guarantee you, they knew that he was not going to be back. I'm not sure how much it affected their draft plans because all they did was take Micah Robinson in the seventh round at corner, but you get my point. Kalen King, he was a player that I know a lot of fans were really high on just a year ago. And if I were willing to bet, I would be willing to tell you, and this is how sort of how I felt all along, to be honest, I would be willing to bet that Green Bay at this point last year was not super high on Kalen King and did not think that he was probably going to have a major spot on the team. But I know a lot of fans at this point last year were like, well, maybe corners not so much because they've got Kalen King up and coming. The Nate Hobbs, Javon Bullard slot situation, I think we all were sort of wondering if Hobbs was going to be outside or inside. And, you know, Matt and Jeff Hafley talked about that, you know, when they picked him up. But we didn't know. I don't even know if Green Bay knew that Javon Bullard was going to be a full-time slot player at that point in time. That was something that evolved. And then, you know, it goes without saying, it's not something that Green Bay had on their mind going into the draft, of course, but Kenny Clark was a Packer. Micah Parsons was not. That's a pretty significant aspect of this as well. So there were these things that we as fans did not know. Now, a couple of these things, again, I don't think Green Bay knew either, but some of them they did. And they had their own plans for some of these players that we were not privy to. And we are, you know, going out there projecting, hey, here's what Green Bay is probably going to do in the draft. But guys like Colby Wooden, maybe Travis Glover, maybe not liking Kalen King, that maybe altered what they were thinking as they headed into the draft. So today, what I want to do is go over a group, basically kind of position by position, and review some players that if Green Bay either really likes them or really doesn't like them, or maybe views them differently than we do, it could really change how they think about each of these positions going into the draft. So let's start with quarterback. And just to be really clear before I actually go any further, we could say that there's somebody at every position, right? Like Damian Martinez, right? Do they maybe love Damian Martinez? Okay, maybe. Like we could go position. Do they love Tyron Herring at corner? Maybe. But those are probably outside the realm of any reality, right? So I'm trying to stick to here of like, hey, there's a realistic possibility that maybe they like or dislike a player more than we know. All right. So with that in mind, quarterback, maybe Kyle McCord, again, we could put him in that conversation, but Desmond Ridder is the real one here. I think there's three pathways of how Green Bay thinks of Desmond Ridder right now. The first is that they think he's a legitimate backup quarterback. They got their hands on him a year ago. You know, they cut Clayton Toon and Ridder comes in. And he didn't do anything for them. It's not like he got in the game or anything, but they made him the backup at that point because of the injuries to Malik Willis. And, you know, or at least at minimum, he was the number three. I can't remember if Willis was active for the Chicago game. I think he ended up being active, but either way, they gave that Toon spot to Desmond Ridder. They got some time with him, you know, in Green Bay, and maybe they saw something and they're like, yeah, he has all the tools. He was a former high draft pick. He started and I think beat Green Bay in the past. And maybe they view him as a legitimate backup quarterback. And they're going into this draft and into, you know, the rest of free agency in the offseason being like, we've got our backup quarterback. The other, and I think the most likely, the second and the most likely, is that they think he's competition. They feel comfortable with him being one of the four guys in that room in the offseason, but they don't view him as, you know, just a lock to be the backup. And they don't view him as just like, well, we're clearly going to cut this guy. But they view him as legitimate competition, but they'd like more competition in that room. The third is that they know. They know that both Kyle McCord and Desmond Ridder cannot be the backup quarterback for this team, and that they're going to have to do something at some point in time, whether that be in the draft or post-draft or trading a draft pick late for an Anthony Richardson or a Will Levis or something like that. But they already know. They know that Desmond Ridder can't be their backup. I think the most likely is that they view him as legitimate competition, but want more competition in that room. But how they view him, if whether they love him or maybe they know he's not the guy, that could change how they go about the draft. If they legitimately think like, yeah, he's the number two, we have no concerns with that whatsoever, then in the draft, you might be looking more of just like, you know, maybe a sixth or seventh round guy to compete for that number three spot if the right guy falls to you. But you're not probably looking for anything more than that. And if you know for sure he's not going to be the guy, well, again, that probably presses the button a little bit more of like, hey, fourth, fifth round, like we can absolutely look at a QB. And if not, we may want to look at seventh round draft trades to try to get against somebody like Anthony Richardson or Will Levis. So Desmond Ridder at quarterback could absolutely change their thinking of what they need to do for the rest of this offseason, and particularly potentially in the NFL draft. We'll be right back. At running back, Marshawn Lloyd. I don't know how Green Bay can go into the remainder of this offseason thinking anything but it's great if we get him, but we can't count on him. And that's from somebody who loves Marshawn Lloyd, thinks it's completely silly for anybody that wants to cut Marshawn Lloyd at this point. He is so freaking talented. He is so fun to watch. I've enjoyed every single time he's been in practice. I've seen mouths agape on the sidelines for things that he has done at practice. And when he's out there, there is a legitimate buzz about him. But he has missed basically two full years of football. He didn't play all that much in college. So to just think all of a sudden in year three, it's like, yeah, we got our backup running back. He's our guy. I think that would be a huge, massive, spectacular leap of faith, a Lambo leap of faith, if you will. And I don't think that that would be the wisest thing to do. Now, I hope that he is the backup running back, and I hope that he is completely healthy this season, and I hope they don't need a contingency plan, but I would absolutely go into this draft thinking we better have a contingency plan, because I don't think Pierre Strong or Damian Martinez are somebody that they're probably super high on at this point in time. And while I love Chris Brooks, he's kind of the quintessential number three running back where he can be your blitz pickup guy and he can do some things well for you, maybe play a little bit on teams as well. But you really, in an ideal world, probably don't want him as your number two. So how they go into this offseason thinking about Marshawn Lloyd, if they think, hey, we've got running back two in hand, he's going to be our guy, we're not even going to think about injuries, he's it. All right, well, then they're probably not going to address running back in any sort of significant way. But if they're looking at it as like, yeah, we don't trust this, we know we have to get a contingency plan here in case he gets hurt again, which is probably what they are thinking, well, then in that case, you don't really have a backup running back. Brooks is your three. The rest are probably, you know, kind of practice squad type guys. And Lloyd, you're not trusting. So you have a wide open gaping spot in that number two running back room, or the number two running back spot in the running back room. So that their thinking there completely changes whether they are basically set at running back or feel like they legitimately need a real number two. That would go a long way one way or the other. Wide receiver is a bit more interesting. There's a few things I want to talk through here at the wide receiver position. The first would be, are they actually considering a trade at wide receiver? Whether that be a Jaden Reed or a Dontavian Wicks, those would be the two most likely. I think Wicks is probably the most likely. If they would trade Wicks, well, that changes where your current depth chart is at wide receiver. And it makes you more likely to draft a wide receiver one way or the other, whether it's a third round pick, second round pick, or whether it's a sixth or seventh. It opens up a little bit more possibility for that player to come in, compete, make the team, and actually maybe even get some snaps. If Wicks is there, you've got your top six basically already set in stone in all likelihood, because you've got Watson, Reed, Wicks, Golden, Savion Williams, and probably Sky Moore. That doesn't even include Bo Melton, who is a good chance to make the team as a wide receiver, corner, special teams dude. So you don't have a ton of, you know, options there. If you're going to draft a wide receiver, you're going to have to cut one of those other guys. And Melton probably doesn't count as one of the guys you can cut. And I don't know that you want to cut any of those other guys. I mean, the only one would be Sky Moore. You're not cutting any of the other ones. So yeah, it's a really interesting scenario. So if they are actually considering trading one of those guys, that opens up the possibility of drafting a wide receiver maybe higher. And if they're not, if they're just staying status quo, it makes it a lot tougher to draft somebody second, third, fourth round, just in my opinion. The next one is Savion Williams. If Savion Williams is somebody that they are incredibly high on and we don't know it, he's a third round pick a season ago, that potentially changes the thinking too. You're probably feeling really good then that, you know, you're going to get at least Christian Watson back. And now you've got Matthew Golden, who you really like, and Savion Williams, who you really like. Even if Reed and Wicks leave and Sky Moore doesn't work out or is gone, you still have a trio of Savion Williams, who, again, in this scenario, they love, plus Golden, plus either Watson or Reed, whoever they extend. Again, probably Watson. And if they extend Reed, then they've got both. But they feel great about that trio going into next year and then can just build depth behind it. But if they're thinking like, yeah, we need a lot from Savion Williams, that we this is still a major project, and that could change too of where they think this wide receiver room is at. And then the other one just really is just Bo Melton, right? He basically just played wide receiver. And by the end of the year, he was getting legitimate snaps. If they're thinking like, we're going to reverse this and he's just back full-time at wide receiver, again, that crams that room up potentially even a little bit more. If they could go in the opposite direction too and be like, listen, we know we kind of split him both ways, but we really like him as potentially a corner. We're going to have him as corner full-time. Well, that takes him out of that room. So all of those things, depending on what they're thinking, could either crowd that wide receiver room quite a bit. If they don't make a trade, they love Savion Williams and Bo Melton's now a full-time wide receiver. All right, that room gets really crammed really fast. And on the flip side, if they trade a wide receiver and Bo Melton moves to corner full-time and they don't like Savion Williams, well, guess what? There's a ton of opportunity there. So I'm sure there's somewhere in the middle of all of that, but you get my point. Tight end is just Josh Whiley. I think Josh Wiley's the interesting one here. They brought him back on a one-year deal. And what do they view him as? He's in an interesting spot because I think in an ideal world, Tucker is your alpha, right? Musgrave's your receiving tight end. And then your other tight end, I'm not even going to label it as a number three because I think it would be almost like a duo number two, but just with Musgrave being more the receiving guy and your other guy being more of your blocking tight end. Except Josh Wiley's not really a blocking tight end. I don't think Musgrave's going anywhere. I know there's, you know, some of the, could they trade him or things like that? Maybe, but I just think it's unlikely. I think he probably has more value to Green Bay than anything they're going to get in return. So I think Musgrave stays. So what do they feel like they can use Wiley as that tight end three? Probably, since they brought him back, and maybe again go Darian Kennard or Travis Glover as that extra offensive lineman. But if they really like him, and think, I know it's just a one-year deal, right? So it's not like they gave him like a three-year, $9 million contract or something. But if they like him enough, that could be somebody that they just kind of have that spot already set for and are probably thinking that it's not something that they really need to address. If they really want a blocking tight end, or, you know, Wiley's just a camp tryout guy in their eyes, that opens up some possibilities as well. What I will say is, I don't think Josh Wiley, or it's certainly any of like the Messiah Swinsons or Drake Dabneys, and even Luke Musgrave, should hinder them from drafting a tight end if they like one, because Musgrave and Wiley will both be unrestricted free agents next year. And you certainly shouldn't be making really any draft decisions on, you know, the fact that Josh Wiley's on your team. So if you like somebody, go get him. But if they do really like Josh Wiley, that does change things just a little bit. Offensive line, I want to go in a couple different directions here. The first I will say is Anthony Belton. I'm not even going to talk about Zach Tom not being healthy in time or anything like that. I'm not putting that in the ether. I'm going to go with the assumption that Zach Tom is going to be 100% good to go and have his best season yet at right tackle. But as a starter, Anthony Belton, how do they feel that, you know, that right guard spot went for him towards the end of the year? If I'd be willing to bet you right now, I'd be willing to bet you he's their right guard. They feel confident in it. They like the progress that he made at the end of the year. And that's going to be his spot going into the season. That said, he didn't play great. He didn't. Did he get better as time went on? Yes, but there were a lot of hiccups and it left still a lot to be desired. So maybe they have sort of wishful thinking of like, hey, we think he's going to progress and take that step and be guard full time. And that's what's going to do it. And we're good there. But if they in the back of their minds are thinking, yeah, that sounds good, but like, what if he doesn't? We need a contingency plan here. If they're more worried about Belton than maybe we think right now, that could change up the right guard thought process a little bit and maybe keep them open to a guard earlier in the draft to come in and actually compete with Belton. The other one is just the depth on the offensive line. And I think the real question here is, what do they think of Darian Kennard, Jacob Monk, and the aforementioned Travis Glover? If they think that, like, hey, Travis Glover is going to be our kind of swing everything, like, at least, you know, he was their, you know, kind of swing guard and right tackle, I would say. He played a little left guard, a little right tackle, can play a little left tackle as well, and they feel comfortable with that. Kennard was their swing left tackle, right tackle, also played some guard. If they feel like, hey, either Kennard or Glover can be like our sixth offensive lineman, and the other one can be our seventh, and Monk can be our eighth, and then the ninth and tenth spots are going to be developmental players like Donovan Jennings or a John Williams or, you know, a rookie that they take this year, well, then they're probably pretty set. They probably aren't going to do a whole heck of a lot else. Again, if they are maybe a little bit cautious with what they think Belton's going to bring them and they don't love their depth, well, then you can bet they're probably going to go fishing for, you know, two or three offensive linemen in this draft. And that wouldn't be surprising. So how they feel about specifically Belton as a starter, but a lot of their depth pieces too, could really change their calculus on what they want to do in this draft on offensive line. Interior defensive line. Justice and I have talked about this a couple times now. I've probably talked about it outside of this as well, but what do they view, you know, Javon Hargrave as? If they view Javon Hargrave as their starting nose tackle, well, all of this talk for us of, like, you know, a potential nose tackle in round one, or in round two, it doesn't nuke it because Hargrave's older, just like Minnesota signed him to a multi-year deal and then cut him after 1 year. It's well within the realm of possibility that Hargrave could really just be basically on a one-year deal here in Green Bay and they'll release him next offseason. So it doesn't completely change the thought process and take defensive tackle out of the equation entirely at round two. But if they, on the flip side, do not view him as a nose tackle at all, if they're just like, yeah, we have no intention of playing him at nose tackle, we know he didn't like playing there, and we view him as a 3-4 defensive end and somebody that's going to kick in, you know, it would be an inside pass rusher, certainly not a nose tackle. Okay, well then nose tackle is still a barren wasteland because all you have is, you know, Nasir Stackhouse and Jonathan Ford. And so that's a huge, huge need. But if they legitimately view Hargrave as that guy, well, then you have less of a need as nose tackle. And if they're just set on him being that guy, and then you maybe have a little bit more need at defensive end, 3-4 defensive end, because, you know, you've got Devontae Wyatt for one of those spots, you know, Carl Brooks, Warren Brinson, a couple others, but you lost Colby Wooden. So you could maybe need that type of player a little bit more than the nose tackle type. So that's the first one that could change their thought process. The other is, you know, just guys like Warren Brinson and Nasir Stackhouse. They drafted Warren Brinson a year ago. How do they see him fitting in? Is he somebody that could take the Colby Wooden approach this offseason? And they say, hey, actually, we want you to be a nose tackle. We want you to put on, you know, 15 pounds this offseason and become more of a physical presence at the nose. I don't know if he'd be willing to do that. I don't know if he would, you know, whatever, but maybe that's the case. Or maybe they want him to be a little bit more spry and say, hey, actually, we want you as a 3-4 defensive end. And so we, you know, take off a little weight. We think that's actually going to make you a little bit more spry and be able to jot into the backfield a little bit better. That could be the possibility. And just how they view him as a player after a full year in Green Bay. I personally like him. I think there's a lot of juice and upside there, but how they view him and where they think he's going to play could change what their thought process is. And then Nasir Stackhouse, this is a redshirt player basically the entirety of last year. They liked him so much as a UDFA that they gave him a 53-man spot all year long to just not play him, to just develop him. He got a cup of coffee early in the year, but even by the time, like, they brought Jordan Riley in and Riley went immediately ahead of Stackhouse. Then they brought Jonathan Ford in and Jonathan Ford went immediately ahead of Stackhouse. So I don't think they felt he was ready, but they never wavered from him being on the team. They never gave up on him to the point where they waived him to pick up something else. He stayed on the 53-man roster. So if they feel like he can take a major step in year two, same with Warren Brinson, that could really change how they view the interior of that defensive line. Edge rusher, Baron Sorrell and Colin Oliver are the big two here. Colin Oliver, probably less so, because he just got that one game against Minnesota and barely practiced a year ago. And of course, now you're moving to a 3-4 But Baron Sorrell played a decent amount, had some real legitimate flashes, was a fourth round pick. I think he's going to be on the exact Kingsley and Igbari sort of career arc. I think that's the kind of player he's going to be. I think he can be a little bit better than that. But how like, are they thinking right now that, well, Micah's out, like Baron Sorrell is just ready to take the mantle as the starting defensive end opposite or starting edge rusher, outside linebacker, however you want to view it, opposite of LVN until Micah's back? That'd be a pretty big step. If they view him as like, hey, we think he's going to be ready and he's going to take a big step for us, and or Colin Oliver, maybe Brenton Cox, right? But if they like that trio, all right, well, in the meantime, while Micah's out, if you feel good about those three players, LVN plus those three, you're probably fine with, and then you get Micah back down the road. If they're a lot more hesitant, especially with guys like Colin Oliver, Brenton Cox, who they were on, you know, they brought back, you know, for a pretty minimal deal. If it's just like, yeah, we think Sorrell is going to take a step, but we're not sure about the other guys. Again, edge becomes a pretty significant need for this team. So how do they view Baron Sorrell, Colin Oliver, Brenton Cox? But I think primarily the big one here is Baron Sorrell. At linebacker, Tyron Hopper is the big one. And we kind of learned a little bit. Now, Hopper is a more weak side type linebacker. So he's a little bit in no man's land that Edrin Cooper's playing his role. He's not really a strong side guy. He's not really a middle backer. I think he can be a little bit of a middle backer. If Green Bay does view him as an inside, like a true like Mike type linebacker, well, they told you how they feel about Tyron Hopper then. They did not feel like he was ready because they felt the need to go out and get Zaire Franklin via trade by trading away Colby Wooden. If Hopper was ready for that role, you're not making that deal. You're just keeping Colby Wooden or trading Colby Wooden for something else, right? So I would have to say that they have told us already that they do not feel like Tyron Hopper is ready to take that sort of step. But where does that leave him? My gut tells me they feel like Hopper and McDuffie are going to be two really good backups to their two starters in Franklin and Coop. But if they do have concerns about him, and of course, you know, McDuffie is not getting any younger. This is probably going to be his last year on the team. We'll see. You never know. But they could start looking for replacements for, you know, for that spot and maybe just a better long-term plan if they've started losing faith in Tyron Hopper. We'll be right back. At corner, the really minimal one here is Bo Melton. Again, whether they keep him at corner or move him back to wide receiver or how they kind of view him this offseason, my guess is it's the same as last year. But everything else basically at corner is a complete grab bag. What I mean by that is I think we know Javon's going to play in the slot. I think we feel pretty confident about that. How they personally, internally view Keyshawn Nixon, Benjamin St. Juiced, I'll even put Kamal Haddon in that category, Carrington Valentine. I've talked about for a while now. I think they like that group a lot more than you or I do. I think they're probably wrong. I think they need more help there. And to be fair, Goody has said more competition, but I think that was before St. Juiced, so maybe they just view St. Juiced as that competition. I would be pretty shocked still if we don't see a corner at least rounds 2, 3, or 4, just because it's not just a need for competition this year. Next year, your only corner under contract is Benjamin St. Juiced on basically a team option. They can get out of that contract very easily. They need this both now and in the future, especially in the future, but they could use the competition now too. So I think they know that they need some addition of talent here, but I would also be willing to bet you that they like that group more than probably you or I do. But if that's false, well, corner goes really high up on the board, right? Because again, they need it next year. And now if they're not confident in that group, they need it now too. I don't think they're going to find anything really out there in free agency to their liking. So they better address it pretty aggressively in the draft. If they are very similar to how they felt last year when they had options to take corners and they're like, we like Keyshawn. We like Carrington Valentine. We're going to move Bo to corner. We've got Kamal Haddon. If they feel better about that group than we think, and now they've added Benjamin St. Juiced, it might be into round 5, 6, or 7 before they grab a corner again. That's a big one. I have no idea. I think they're going to grab one early, but if they're just satisfied, which I hope is not the case, but if they are, they're probably not going to be aggressive at it. Safety, I think, is the weakest one, meaning like I don't think there's anything they're thinking here. I think they know exactly what they have. They've got an unbelievable safety in Xavier McKinney, an unbelievable safety in Evan Williams, a player in Javon Bullard who can be a really good safety, but he's currently playing the slot position. And I think they feel like Ketanji Oladapo can be a really good backup for them. If there were to be a player, I would say here, maybe two, Ketanji Oladapo, if they're not feeling like he's ready to step up as the core backup, because let's just put it this way. You have your two starters, right, in Evan and X, and you probably don't want to move Javon Bullard back to safety. You probably want to keep him in that slot spot just because he's been playing well there, and you don't really have a backup slot guy right now anyway. So you want to keep him there. If they don't feel like Ketan is ready to step in for X or for Evan, then they need another safety. If they're good with Ketan, which I think they should be in that backup role, they can probably just kind of mostly leave it as is and maybe take a guy later in the draft. The other one I'll just throw in there really quick is I did like how Jonathan Baldwin, first of all, he was one of my favorite UDFAs a year ago for Green Bay, but I did like how he played in that Minnesota game when he got a little bit of a chance last year. I do think he has the potential to be a backup safety, a guy that plays on special teams a little bit too. You probably don't want him as anything more than like your fifth safety. So I'm not saying that he's probably going to be a solution to your backup safety question if you're not feeling confident with Ketanji Oladapo, but he could be somebody that they like a little bit more and just a player that most Packers fans probably don't think about all that much in Jonathan Baldwin, but he's a pretty good young player. And I could see them maybe feeling like he could potentially make this team on a 53-man roster. That's my grouping. Desmond Ridder at quarterback, Marshawn Lloyd at running back, you know, the sort of trade situation, Savion Williams, Bo Melton at wide receiver, Wiley at tight end, Belton starting offensive line, and then Kennard, Monk, and Glover as backups. Is Hargrave your nose tackle, or do you not feel like he can play nose tackle? Brinson and Stackhouse, what can they do in year two? Baron Sorrell, Colin Oliver, same situation, just at edge instead of interior defensive line. How do they view Tyron Hopper at this point in time? What's their entire view of the corner room? It's hard to read at the moment. And then how do they feel about Ketanji Oladapo? Those are the players that I think, depending on what those answers are that we just kind of went through those questions, if they feel really good, it could, again, feel like they don't need to do as much in the draft. Now, that would be if all of the answers were, yeah, I don't think it's going to go that way, but you get my point. We are always on the outside looking in, even people with access to the team and, you know, like whatever, like we're always trying to play catch up of what the actual people inside the building are feeling about these players. And there's a good chance that some of the players that we talked about today, Green Bay feels better about than we have any clue about right now. And there is a chance that there are a couple players that we feel like, yeah, Green Bay probably feels great about them, that Green Bay is a lot more trepidation about than we have any idea about right now. Or maybe Matt has an inkling of, you know, some of the frustration in the locker room, and maybe Matt wants to move on from some of those players that were maybe causing some division or not buying in or whatever that might be. And we may not know that, and he might. And so maybe they go in a different direction with a player like that. Tough to say, tough to know, but any of these things could alter what Green Bay ultimately does in the draft. That's what I wanted to look at today. Hope you guys enjoyed it. Appreciate you guys taking the time to join me today. I'll be right back here tomorrow. Of course, happy hour on Friday as well. Make sure to check it out over on Spotify Video if you have not already. Of course, we're everywhere where you find your favorite podcast and on YouTube. Shout out to our All-Pro and Hall of Fame members, PJ Wynn, Brandon Paletta, Boom Handle, Donna Lee, Lori Lord, David McCluskey, Alex Wong, Peter Rataka, Jay Zimmerman, B. Brown, Puerto Rican Packer, Dan Gesford, Chris Rager, Izzy Roberts, Ian Ewing, Willie Winkle-Sinkle, the Gable Storm Pack Attack cast, Chris Weish, Craig, John D. Metropolis, Devin Lane, Richard Morales, Les Nino, Beast Bumblebee, Steve Bates, John Mark Lydell, Nemo, Donald Decker, Damon Hartley, Zilch Zillertson, Large Charles, Will Glass, Imperium Collectibles, Carlo Delgado, Benjamin Sargent, and Jay Stanley. I'll see you guys tomorrow, but until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.